south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, just a little announcement. The show for Friday, August 20th, and Sunday, August 22nd will be repeat shows from the best of, or maybe the worst of, The Expat Files shows, depending how you look at it. I'll be off the grid in the jungle and won't be able to do those shows live. All right, now let's talk about some of the problems and changes with teaching English online. You longtime listeners have heard me talk about this before. For the last couple of years now, it's been a very nice way for gringos and expats to supplement their income while down here, making money from home, being your own boss, and setting your own hours too. But our veteran English teacher man on the scene, Mr. B, has some sort of upsetting and sad news for us. Let me read this email he just sent me. He starts out by saying, Johnny, unfortunately, it looks like it's over. The teaching English online thing is kaput. Last week, China announced a new law. Foreigners can't teach Chinese students online anymore. Before all this, China students in the elementary, middle, and high school used to have 3 English exams per year. That kept us English teachers pretty busy. Now, the new law in Beijing is that elementary and middle school students will not have English anymore as part of their exams. Here's how it will work from now on. China will not give licenses to any new online English companies. Current students, though, that are under contract with existing companies can finish their contracts. For example, I have a couple of students with a few months left on their contracts with my company. So once my students finish that contract, I'm not allowed to teach them anymore. So why the drastic change? Why shut down a whole big industry? Now, the word on the blogs and the forums, according to the Chinese, is that English-speaking countries don't produce anything good anymore, anything of interest. So, the Chinese government is saying there's just no good reason to be teaching English anymore to our kids. Now, Johnny, Mr. B says, people can still teach English online to folks from other countries, like Indonesia, for example, but there's just so much competition amongst the teachers. Not to mention about 75% of online teaching companies are shutting down now because of the Chinese thing. So, Johnny, unfortunately, sorry for the bad news. I know a lot of expat gonna-bes and wannabes were counting on the fact they could teach English online while down in Latin America as a fallback position. Well, it looks like that ship has sailed. Signed, Mr. B. Well, Mr. B, thanks for the update. Though some of us knew with this COVIDian thing, big changes were coming because with so many teachers out of work, they naturally scrambled to get into online English teaching, which made the competition fierce. And now that the Chinese government doesn't think English is important to learn anymore, well, that kind of caps it. Though it really doesn't make sense. The funny thing is, if you look into doctorate and graduate programs in United States universities, they're just flooded with students from India and China. There's huge demand for getting into a U.S. university, and of course, everyone speaks English in the U.S., that makes it difficult to buy the Chinese line that English just isn't important in the curriculum anymore. That's BS. Besides that, everyone who's in the sciences knows that all cutting-edge scientific publications come out in English first. Everyone knows that. Take the Journal of Nature and Scientific American, the most prestigious of science journals. Most of the articles, white papers, and studies appearing in those journals don't get translated to other languages for sometimes months or years. Though I can see why China is trying to claim English is no longer a valid language for their students, it turns out to be a very good propaganda measure. I'm sure if you asked any Chinese or Asian parent if they thought if English was a good and useful language for their kids to learn, they'd all be unanimous in supporting it, especially since most of them desire their kids to end up in a U.S. university where only English is spoken. But the Chinese Communist government has other ideas. So then where does that leave gringos and expats who are sort of counting on that kind of work or as a fallback position? Well, there's always English teaching positions at helicopter schools. Though if you're on the gringo tourist trail, those kinds of teaching jobs are hard to come by. There's just so much competition. But if you're off the gringo tourist trail, man, there are English private school teaching jobs galore. Problem is, it's a 9-to-5 and you're not your own boss. That's a big drawback if you want to set your own hours and don't want to work for the man. You know what I mean. So what's a gringo expat who doesn't have a big nest egg to do? Though, truthfully, most people who come down with a plan B are 50 or older and they've already got a pretty decent nest egg. Or they're getting a pension or Social Security. And though they may want to work or start a business once they get down here, it's not really that urgent for the over 50 crowd. So, whether they've planned it or not, the over 50 crowd will often turn their hobby or something they really like into a money-making business. But what about the under 50 expat crowd? Say, people who come down with a small nest egg, 10, 20, or 50 grand. That kind of dough won't last forever, and eventually you'll have to start making money somehow. There are lots of ways, but one really good way I've found is to put yourself up on one of those freelance sites. Have you seen those? Here's what that's all about. You know, all of us are good at something or another. We're bad at stuff too, but we're good at things. We have our niches. Maybe it has something to do with an actual structured career like accounting, or maybe you're a makeup artist or have had a career as a nutritionist. Well, you just go to one of those many freelance sites on the web. You put your mugshot up there and a small bio and a list of what you have to offer. For example, suppose you need some kind of custom website design. You go to the freelance site as a prospective buyer now. You post what you want to have done and the range you're willing to pay. Though sometimes you don't have to put a price in there. You wait for bids to come in. For example, a while back I had some internet work to do. I posted it. And within 2 days I must have got 50 bids from people anywhere from 50 to 200 bucks. From people who could do it from anywhere in the world. That's the point. I got responses from India, China, Russia, even Brazil. Though it doesn't have to be for computer services. It could be for anything. Now, don't tell me you're not good at anything. You've got nothing worthwhile to sell. We're all good at something. You just have to sit down and make a list. Here's what I suggest. And I mentioned this just this week to a very cool guy, a previous seminar attendee, who I just did another phone consult with. I said, if you can't figure out what you're really good at, what you have to offer, your specific niche, maybe you have 2 or 3 or 10. Well, you just take a piece of paper, maybe 2. You paste them on your kitchen table or in your bathroom somewhere. Then over the days, even weeks, you start jotting down things you're good at or you think you could be good at if only you could watch a few more YouTubes on it. For example, a while back, my DJI drone crashed and the camera slumped down. I couldn't get it to move on the gimbal anymore. And I looked and looked on the YouTubes to see how to repair that thing, and there were a number of solutions. And none of them could claim to be 100% sure that they could diagnose or fix your problem. The YouTube videos give you some general ideas, but they couldn't specifically help you out in that situation. It was just so many things that could have gone wrong to cause that problem. So then how do you diagnose that problem and do the proper repairs without screwing the thing up even more? Well, guess what? On the freelance site, there are guys and probably some girls and gender fluid transvestites too who specialize in drone repair. So you post the problem, wait for some responses, select the best fit for you, and they'll walk you through it step by step on a Zoom call. That's their niche. You name the problem and there's somebody on those freelance sites that can help you out. Oh, and I have to tell you about this one. A good friend of mine, an expat guy, wrote a book. He thought he'd written the great un-American novel. I know quite a few gringo expats who've written books once they've got their plan B going. Finally, they've got time on their hands and they've always wanted to do it. So anyway, this expat gringo buddy of mine wrote a book and he asked me to be one of the first readers. And man, the story was fantastic, but his writing, abysmal. He kept shifting between first, second, and third person. You can't do that and maintain any kind of continuity. I ought to know. I've written 4 or 5 books myself. Bet you didn't know that, huh? And I told him, look, you need to have an editor, someone to polish up your prose. So where do you find someone that can do that without charging you an arm and a leg? Well, you just go to one of those freelance websites and you explain exactly what you want. And in his case, he must have gotten 100 responses. And the ones that looked promising asked him to send just 1 chapter of his book. Before they gave him a bid, they wanted to see how fatal his writing was. Anyway, I think he ended up paying something like $400 or $500 to have the whole book nicely polished up. At least put into a state where it wasn't an embarrassment to read. Though, like I said, the story was fantastic, man. Hollywood could have done a number on it. By the way, he said almost every single person who put in a bid or answered his query were teachers or English majors. So if you think that kind of degree is totally useless unless you're going to be a teacher. Well, not so. With just a little bit of creativity, you can become your own boss, make your own hours, and become a book editor. So again, just think of the many things you're good at. And even if you can't think of anything, just post a piece of paper around the house and your list will start growing. You can count on it. For example, maybe you're good at gardening or you have a specific niche in gardening, like orchids, mangoes, even avocados. I can't tell you how many gringos and expats want to come down to Latin America, start gardening and growing their own, but they're stumped as to how to grow tropical fruits like avocado. Enter the freelance gardener. Man, what some gringos and expats wouldn't give to have one-on-one instructions on how to grow avocados the proper way. Now, I've had avocado trees here before. I've grown them from scratch, you know, from the seed. I've had land that had avocado trees on it already, and I've also bought potted starter plants a foot or two high and replanted them on a lot. But, you know, that's not enough. Avocados are temperamental, at least in the first couple of years. And there are different types of avocados, too. You want to try to grow the Haas ones if you can. That's Haas, H-A-S-S. They're the best tasting ones of all and the most expensive in the stores, too. But it's not like growing lemons. You stick a lemon tree in the ground. Man, it produces forever. You don't have to do a thing to it. Avocados need TLC, and I personally have never had any luck with them. The other thing is, there's not just one or two types of avocados. They've got probably 10 different kinds. And some of them, though, they look like big, ripe, delicious avocados. Inside, they're not. They're not creamy and buttery like the Haas variety. They're tasteless and watery. Same thing with coffee. If you're thinking about coming down here to Latin America and starting a coffee plantation, it's complicated. You probably didn't even know this, but coffee plants, when they're sprouts about 6 inches high, you just don't plant them, watch them grow, and wait for the harvest. Those sprouts, when they're around 6 inches tall, need to be grafted onto another coffee plant. Because you see, the best coffee seems, for some reason or another, to have very shallow roots, and they don't stand up to the winds and the heavy rains in the rainy season. Whereas the crappy-tasting coffee has a very excellent, widespread, and deep root structure. So, if you were to come down here to Latin America and look at a coffee plantation, every single big coffee bush that you see is a grafted combination of two plants. One plant with a very good root structure, grafted to a stem or stalk, that produces very tasty coffee beans. So, like I said, you just don't come down and start a coffee plantation. It's complicated. Did you ever wonder why people into gardening have every kind of fruit and vegetable you can imagine in their own gardens, except coffee? Think about it. You get the idea. Bottom line, if there's anything you need help with, just go to those freelance sites and find the experts, or at least people who are more expert than you at it, for whatever you're looking for. And while you're at it, post yourself as a freelance expert for whatever niche or niches you're good at. That's one way to be your own boss and make your own hours. Just remember, you don't have to make first world money to live like a first world person here in Latin America. Although we all know inflation is taking off everywhere now, thanks to the COVIDiot thing and the idiot politicians and the corrupt U.S. Treasury and Federal Reserve just flooding the world with fake cheap money. Even so, whatever it costs you to live like a first world person up in Cleveland, Detroit, or New York, if you come down here and live off the Gringo Tourist Trail, you'll spend half or less than half as much. Not only that, you'll have half the stress or less than half the stress. You'll have fresher, tastier food, and way too much of it. There are no shortages. And it's coming from local truck farmers, too, so there's no supply chain to disrupt. Plus, the weather. Ah, the weather. You absolutely can't beat it, even in the rainy season. And it is the rainy season right now. That means it'll rain nearly every day, maybe for an hour or two, and sometimes twice a day. But there'll be long periods of blue clouds and sunshine, too. And now this email from Ludi. Ludi, now there's a name for you. Is that a girl or a guy? I think it's a girl. Ludi. She says, when I think back to my grandparents who survived World War II, I remember people used to dry out tea bags and use them four times. There were people who would have thought it was the height of extravagance to be drying their clothes in a dryer when the wind and the sun did the job for free. Then to have a gas or electric dryer was a real extravagance. Proof you were moving on up or had a Sears or Montgomery Ward's charge card. But still, when my grandparents got their first dryer, they rarely used it. It was more or less to prove they could afford one. It was a gift from my grandfather to try to save my grandmother some wear and tear and time. She never asked for it, but it was a gift, so she accepted it. But she made it known that she thought it was unnecessary. I remember they got up at 5 o'clock in the morning every day. And Grandpa, who worked at Massey Ferguson, would come home at 6 at night. And my grandma would say, take your shoes off and don't you dare sit yourself down in the living room. Go clean up, take a shower, and change your clothes first. Sure, he knew that drill by heart, but it was kind of a ritual with her. She was one of those old ladies who had plastic covers on all her living room furniture. And when she died and all the grandkids divvied up the furniture, we took off the plastic wrappers and they were absolutely furniture store showroom quality. She wore the pants all right, but my grandpa didn't mind. You see, at my grandma's house, there was a regular shower in the bathroom and there was a crude shower specifically rigged up for my grandfather in the basement. And I remember some days he'd come home extra dirty and grimy and my grandma wouldn't have to say a word. She'd just point to the basement door and off he went. Yep, I remember when patience, hard work, resilience, and fortitude were required and parents and grandparents helped to develop those skills. And their real stresses and concerns were on another level compared to the stresses and concerns of people who whine and fret because they've only got 2 bars on their Wi-Fi signal. And I remember if I was naughty as a kid, I got my bottom smacked and sent to my room. And when they grounded me and said, no TV, they meant no TV. It wasn't no TV. And if I whined for 20 minutes, they'd give in. When they grounded you, there was no reprieve. Oh, and you never put your dirty feet on the table or a chair. And you didn't dare slouch either. My grandparents aren't alive today, but if they were, they could never understand how their grandkids and great-grandkids became so fragile, having to be protected from everything. I remember when my grandfather told my brother the only way to deal with a bully is to sucker punch him. Today, if a parent said that to a kid, he'd probably end up in court. Today's children have become babies, and today's adults have become children. And while no one was looking, the state stepped into every corner of our lives. The woke generation emerged, and they deemed complete state and government intervention both necessary and desirable. Then you've got adolescent kids and even adults constantly comparing themselves and their lives to others. It's one of the tragic side effects of the internet. That's why young people are so maladjusted these days. Facebook is nothing but an internet game of one-upsmanship. You post a dinner, I post a better one. You post a selfie at the beach, I post a selfie at a better beach. I don't suppose anyone recalls Theodore Roosevelt's quote of more than 100 years ago when he said, "Comparison is the thief of joy." And Mark Twain said, quote, "Comparison is the death of joy." But alas, today's adolescents and young adults have never heard of Theodore Roosevelt or Mark Twain. After all, Twain was a white supremacist racist. His books have been banned and canceled, right? You know there is no room for discussion or debate with the hypersensitive Facebook and Instagram and Twitter generation who are incapable of creativity or having an independent opinion unless it's liked by the consensus of snowflakes. You're automatically racist if you even slightly roll your eyes when someone mentions BLM or white privilege. Oh, I have my regrets too, Johnny. I'm a procrastinator. I really should have come down to one of your earlier seminars and gotten started on my plan B. But you know the procrastinator's favorite word, right? It's tomorrow. Oh, I'll get to it all right. Tomorrow. Anyway, Johnny, keep up the good work. Signed, Ludi from Lubbock, Texas. P.S. At least I have been saving up to come to one of your seminars. Hope you have one before the world goes into mandatory vax mode. In that case, I'll be staying home forever. All right, thanks for that, Ludi. Yeah, you know, when I read emails like that, I can tell frustration up in the States especially is really kicking in. You can see why depression, alcoholism, obesity, and suicides are at the highest levels ever recorded. But on a brighter note, back to Latin American news. Now, I know a lot of you listeners, especially in the big cities up in the States and Europe, you take the metro, you know, the subway. Lots of people in big cities, even people with a lot of dough, don't even own cars. They would rather take the metro or Uber, whatever. I know in Chicago, if you live in the center city, you could pay $500 a month just to rent a parking space for one car. In New York, it could be double that. So many people think, why should I own a car? Now, you must have seen those Hollywood movies where someone is getting chased in a subway, the underground, by a cop, assassin, bad guy, whatever, and they jump the fare gate. It looks so easy, right? Well, you know, a lot of subways these days, especially in Europe, don't have a fare gate. It's an honor system. You buy a ticket in the machine, you carry that in the subway or the bus, and every once in a while, maybe never, some uniformed guy will walk by and ask you for that receipt, you know, just to make sure you've got one. And it's good for that day or ride. Well, have you ever wondered about subway or bus non-payers, people who somehow evade the fare? Well, an international study just came out and said that, for example, in Europe, an average of 6% of the people riding the subway are doing so illegally. They haven't paid. Though in Europe, the farther east you go, into, you know, Poland, Latvia, the Baltic countries, etc., the higher the percentage of fare skippers, up to 15%. Now, in the U.S., the percentage of fare skippers is around 4 to 5%. Canada, around 2%. That makes sense, you know, kinder, gentler Canadians and all that. And Latin America, between 12 and 15%. Have you ever done that? Are you a fare skipper? I think I did that once in Italy. I had to do it because I couldn't figure out the machine. So I took my chances and jumped on anyway. No one stopped me. All right, now this email from Lena. She says, Johnny, I've been an expat in both Peru and Ecuador for around 11 years now. Long enough to hear over and over again from people first coming down, like me, nearing retirement, their number one goal was that they just wanted to be comfortable in retirement. Mostly, of course, they were referring to their finances. But often, they were also talking about creating a sort of secure cocoon for themselves somewhere where they could hide from their worries, pains, and problems. And a lot of them, though they won't admit it, have come down to escape from their friends and family members who were negative people or time vampires, as you've called it, Johnny. People who are just not so fun to be with and who waste your time. How do you jettison a person like that, especially if he grew up next door to you or was your childhood school or neighborhood friend, or even your sister or your cousin? Do you just tell them after 20 years of friendship that you just don't want to be with them anymore because of their pessimism or the cloud of negativity they bring into the room? What can you do? Well, you just get that plan B going and move to Latin America. It solves a ton of bad relationship and friendship problems. You find life is better and you feel more upbeat and positive when you jettison those negative friends and family members from your life. But obviously, most of us can never do that unless you become an expat. Problem is, as I've since learned, comfort and happiness aren't the same thing. As people get older, they tend to start playing it safe while sacrificing their true happiness. To me, there's nothing sadder than to move somewhere and be seduced into a life with plenty of comfort, but little happiness. It would be much better for expats if they used their retirement abroad as an opportunity to push their comfort zones and find out new things about the world and themselves. It's easy to do if you're living, as you say, Johnny, off the gringo tourist trail. But when you're on the tourist trail, with gringos everywhere, there are lots and lots of different cocoons to crawl into. But is that happiness? What's your take on it, Johnny? Signed, Lena. Well, thanks for that perspective, Lena. I've always thought that as long as you're in good health and you're not living under conditions of constant trauma and stress, you're basically content. But to be content is not necessarily being happy. And I am suspicious of people who tell me they're pretty much happy all the time. I don't believe it. Happiness is just not a common, lasting human condition. Sure, we're all happy now and again. Even people with terminal diseases and people in prison. They still laugh and smile occasionally. Are they really happy under those conditions? Then there's those people, even expats, that look bummed out all the time. But they'd be bummed out no matter where they lived. And some of us might feel happiness 3 or 4 times a day. But it's always so fleeting. As for the rest of us, if we're having a comfortable, decent life, that's enough. We'll take it. And those moments of happiness when they come, and they will at the oddest times usually, are just icing on the cake. So will going through with your plan B and moving to Latin America make you happy? Well, if you're an unhappy person in general, probably not. But it will relieve a lot of tension and stress. That's a guarantee. But the happiness part, that's up to you. Though I will admit, when I'm on the gringo tourist trail, I see lots and lots of gringos who are stand-up drunks. The beer is so cheap, they've got so much time on their hands, and the sun is hot. Well, it can be an occupational hazard. In fact, my one-time best friend and business partner in Costa Rica, a Canadian guy who lived next door to me in a condo beachfront neighborhood. I remember one time his wife came over and complained that he'd been drinking a case of beer a day. Now, I didn't know about his problems. I didn't pry. But I did know he was an ex-ski instructor up in Canada, and he had no warm weather hobbies. He was Canadian, so he liked snow skiing and hockey. And because there's none of that in the tropics, he picked up a new hobby, drinking beer. Though his wife told me he was never a drinker up in Canada. The thing is, again, I rarely see that with people who live off the gringo tourist trail because just to make that choice, not to live with a bunch of gringos in a tourist area, says a lot about a person's character. That he or she is more of an inquisitive, flexible, risk-taking, adventurous type. And those kinds of people generally have all sorts of hobbies. All right, moving on. You know, if you read a lot, you come across all kinds of strange factoids, like this one. By 1830, in both Europe and the United States, people did not drink much water. In fact, it was associated with many illnesses. Obviously, because there was no water treatment, and both sewer water and rainwater ended up in the rivers and streams. In fact, in 1830, the average American and European drank 7 gallons of pure alcohol a year. And to be temperate, meaning a non-drinker or an abstainer, meant you'd only be completely shit-faced drunk on birthdays and holidays. So why bring this up? It's because the other day I was out at a restaurant with a couple of gringos and gringas. And the gringa sitting next to me had a glass full of ice, and she started pouring the local bottled water, in a plastic bottle of course, into that glass of ice, and I must have given her a look of disapproval. She said, "Johnny, what are you looking at? What's wrong?" And I said, "Well, I'll never drink anything out of a glass with ice in it unless I prepared the ice." And she said, "Oh yeah, I heard you talk about that on your show." "But come on, Johnny, how could that be true?" She said everyone here at this restaurant's having their drinks over ice. You think they're all going to get sick tonight? I said, no, the Latinos probably won't get sick at all. They're used to the local bacteria, they're conditioned. But our little group of about six, we were the only gringos in there. I wouldn't be surprised if someone in our group didn't have a bad night. But I knew she was single-minded, sort of stubborn type, when she said, I'm not going to drink lukewarm water, and so she disregarded my advice. I thought, okay, your choice. I'm not going to push my ideas on anyone. But I did say to her, next time we go into a restaurant, you tell them you want a cold bottle right off the bat. And if they don't, have it nice and cold, because sometimes they'll tell you they don't refrigerate their bottles. Tell them right away when you first get into the restaurant to throw a couple of bottles in the freezer for you. All right, now from the It Could Happen to You department. Just the other day, a newbie gringo expat signed up for a one-on-one phone consult with me. He said, Johnny, I can't believe what my bank is doing to me. He's talking about his own bank in Minnesota. Turns out he's trying to buy a plot of land on which he'll build a house down in Guatemala. And his bank was throwing up all kinds of roadblocks when he tried to do a wire transfer directly down to the seller's bank in Guatemala. He had the ABA, SWIFT numbers and all that, went down to his bank, initiated the wire transfer. A few days passed and it did not arrive. So he went down to his bank, Minneapolis. And they said, oh, we didn't complete the transfer because we need more information. Now, they didn't contact him. They just didn't do the wire transfer, and he had to find out for himself that they held it up. Turns out they wanted to know what he was going to do with that money. The bank, they were holding out with that question. And he said, what do you mean? It's my effing money, not yours, and it's none of your business. And they said, sorry, it's bank policy. It's for your protection because some people, when they send money out of the country, are involved in a scam. He said, oh yeah, so you're worried about me and my money. Well, what if I took it all out in cash and went to Vegas? Put it all on red and started spinning the roulette wheel. Would you worry about me and my money then? Or wouldn't it matter as long as I lost it in the U.S.? Oh, he was so pissed off, he said. The bank rent-a-cop moseyed on over and told him to calm down. Oh, and I forgot to mention, the seller of the property in Guatemala instructed the gringo to send the money to his bank account in his SA corporation's name. That caused another problem with the buyer's bank in Minnesota. They said they were sorry. They couldn't do the transfer unless they knew the person's name on the account. And the gringo pointed out, the name on the account is the corporation. It's not a personal account, it's a corporate account. But the bank wouldn't budge. Which begs the question, why would anyone want to keep a cent in a U.S. bank? As you've heard, they act like it's their money. You practically have to get on your knees and beg to get your own money out. By the way, if you tried to pull out $1,000 or more in cash from your bank lately, well, be prepared for 50 questions and a 1 or 2 day wait while they gather up the fiat paper. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that story. You'll get those questions again. What's it for? You're going out of the country? They'll want to know where you're going and why. I'm not kidding. Meanwhile, government and the banksters are trying to kill cryptocurrencies. They'll never be able to do it, but you can understand why they see it as a real threat to their corrupt monopoly on monopoly money.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.